The law firm of Perutka & Perutka is proud to present Face the Truth Coast to Coast with your host, Steve Perutka.
And this is Steve Perutka with Face the Truth Coast to Coast here on XM and Sirius Radio. Great to be with you. And we're, as you probably know if you've been listening, we're doing a series on Catholic colleges with true Catholic traditions and true Catholic curricula. And these are Catholic colleges that are recommended by the Cardinal Newman Society in their book, Choosing a Catholic College, and, of course, on their website. And one of the sad things, you'd think there'd be bunches of them. There's about 20, maybe one or two more. But one of them, and we're very proud to have Dr. William Thierfelder on the phone, is Belmont Abbey College. And, Doctor, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks so much, Steve. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
Right. Doctor, you know, I said about 20. Is that overly pessimistic, or is that about right?
Well, I think it's a little pessimistic. What I would say to you is, you know, are some of these other Catholic colleges and universities still Catholic? Yes. I mean, there's good things there.
Right.
The problem is you have some not-so-good things there, too. And my hope is rather than sort of throw them out, you know, as I say, throw the baby out with the bathwater, I think we have to try to regain ground on some of the ones that at least have the desire, you know, to follow Ex Cordia Ecclesiae and to be,
right,
you know, truly supportive of the of that document.
You mentioned Ex Cordia Ecclesiae. Give us a primer on that, if you will.
It's an interesting thing because it's caused a lot of stir. And for maybe the listeners that aren't familiar, there was a document signed quite a while back, Notre Dame and some others, called Land of Lakes.
Right.
And basically what that was about was, for the most part, Catholic colleges and universities deciding they just wanted to be autonomous and be able to make their own decisions and not be able to be directed, you know,
yeah,
by anybody other than their own sense of where they should go.
Right.
And John Paul II, you know, the blessed good man that he was, and good priest and good leader and good father and good pope, gave us a document to help us back. And what it was is it's really out of the heart of the church, Ex Cordia Ecclesiae, that's what it is. And basically it was an apostolic constitution that gave a guideline to Catholic colleges and universities to say, this is what it means if you claim to be a Catholic college or university. And
right,
it's a beautiful document. I don't know how anybody can have a problem with it. It includes, by the way, what if there's people that are there that are not Catholic? It responds to that. But it does mean something if you call yourself Catholic.
Right. Otherwise, take it off the sign. It doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, well,
you know
or is it just, you know, a historical Williamsburg, you know, that you're
right,
back in history and visited or something, and it doesn't
yeah,
really mean anything today.
And, of course, this all started with Father Hasberg at Notre Dame getting his these groups together at Land O'Lakes, I guess, in Wisconsin.
Yes.
And they basically said, they thumbed their noses at the bishops and said, we'll make doctrine here. In our mind. And I guess that's something we've seen perpetuated and increased over the years. And some, you know, thank God John Paul II fought back on it. And thank God that there's some colleges took that to heart, and yours is one of them.
I think one of the problems is, for some reason, many Catholic colleges and universities were afraid that they were going to be not thought of as being
relevant, maybe
relevant or intellectually
yeah,
excellent and so forth. And so somehow they had to fit in with the secular culture. And I don't think that's true at all.
Right.
You know, we have so much to offer in the Catholic intellectual tradition. To give that up or to soften it or to backpedal on it or to diminish it is not right. We shouldn't be doing that.
I wanted to talk about, before we talk about the school, I wanted to talk about you just for a second, if you don't mind.
Oh, my gosh. Okay.
I want to congratulate you. The Sports Faith Hall of Fame is inducting
yes,
you on February 27th.
Yes.
Along with and such past notables as George Halas, Wellington Mara, Brian Piccolo, and Tom Monahan were past recipients. That's quite a crowd to be in.
I've said it to you before, God uses the most inadequate instruments to accomplish his will, so there'll be no mistaking his will. So I can only give credit to God. It's like the parable of the talents. We're just good stewards. Whatever
right,
I have, I am nothing, I know nothing, I have nothing. Anything I have, he's given me. And
right,
all I'm trying to do is double him.
Well, you're being a little tough on yourself, but we certainly appreciate it. That must be now you're in the Hall of Fame. You were an Olympic high jumper. Actually, you didn't take part in the Olympics because of an injury. Is that correct?
Yes, that's right. I was a two-time All-American at University of Maryland.
Wow.
And, I was a former national champion. It's a long story, but I ended up competing towards the end of my career for Ireland. And so
really?
I was a national champion there. And,
now, what year was this?
84.
So you were well after Dick Fosberg. You were.
I was of the era. If anybody knows, for example, Dwight Stone.
Sure. Yeah.
That's the era. That's who I competed against many times.
Yeah.
He did a lot to bring a lot of notoriety to the high jump.
Yeah. Dwight Stone probably still looks like he's 22.
He does. You know. I don't. I have the white beard at this point, so you know you wouldn't mistake me for a current high
right.
jumper. I can tell
well,
you.
Well, Dwight made a nice career. Now you also talk about an eclectic guy, or should I say, a Renaissance man. I don't know. You were also the president of York Barbell Company.
Yeah, I've been all over the place. My life has been, though, I guess the one thread has been sport to a certain degree. I helped co-found a physical therapy sports medicine corporation in the early 90s.
Mm-hmm.
We sold it to NovaCare in the late 90s. I stayed out there, national director of sports science. And then when they sold, I was going to go back to working with pro athletes, which is what I'd done for most of my life. And I was approached by a friend who was owner of a large law firm and asked if I would run a sports representation company, which I did for a couple of years. And I had a hard time with the culture. I won't go into it all now, but I have a great passion that sports should be a means for developing virtue.
Sure.
And it's not a choice between being a goody-two-shoes or a world-class athlete.
No, you can be both.
You can be both. As a matter of fact, I gave a talk one year to the NFL Players Association, and you know, I said to them, how many of you are trying to perfect the intellectual virtue of art?
Right.
They all looked at me like I hit them over the head with a 2x4. And I said, how many of you are trying to perfect yourself as football players? And, you know, everybody raised their hand. I said, that is the intellectual virtue of art. It's the right method of external production. If you're
sure.
trying to perfect yourself in whatever you're doing, that's that virtue. But it's only one of them.
Yeah,
you know, these virtues have to interface and interact with one another. They don't stand independently.
Sure. And sports... There's, you know, when I am desolate and looking for something in this world to grab onto, one of the things is I look at sports and I see that here is still a place where respect for authority is cherished. Here is still a place where discipline is cherished, and here's still a place where hard work pays results. And you know, sometimes when we lose that in the world, we can still see that in sports. And so it's to me, it's a very positive thing.
It is. The problem you have today with pro sports, and I have to first say this, most of the pro guys I worked with a lot of NFL players over my years, great guys. I mean, you'd love them as friends. They're usually good Christians, but at least the ones I was working with, good family men, good husbands and so forth, but you never really hear about them.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, you know, pro sport has become the poster child for vice. I mean, you just see it, envy, sloth, gluttony, greed, pride.
Yeah.
I mean, they're all in there. And then that is what the culture becomes. People see it as that, and then it affects the college level, and then the high school level, and then it's down to the youth level.
Yeah.
And I think part of the problem with sport today is that we have removed it from what it really is, which is play.
Yeah.
It's not work. It's play.
Yeah.
And when it becomes work for selfish purposes, it doesn't do the kinds of things you're talking about, and that's unfortunately some of the bad stuff we see today in it.
Right.
And I will say to you, though, I think as Catholics, we have an obligation and a responsibility to not do one of two things. These are not the two things we should do. I see some Catholics say, oh, it's so bad, and they put out their arm and they say, I don't want to have anything to do with it.
Right.
And then there's the other group that says, well, what the heck, what can you do about it? That's just the way it is. And I'm saying, we can't do it. We got to take back the game.
Yeah.
We got to make it what it's called to be. And we can. And I will tell you, I've spoken to hundreds of thousands of people in person, and certainly millions on radio and TV and so forth.
Right.
I have never had anybody come up to me and say, that's a terrible idea.
Right.
Everybody
says,
how do we do that?
How do we do that? Sure. And there are some great athletes and some, I mean, I always felt privileged in Baltimore that we had guys like John Unitas and Brooks Robinson and Cal Ripken. And for, you know, for as long as I was a kid or raising kids, there was somebody around. Matt Stover, great guy.
Yeah.
You know, there are some people that just stand out. Maybe they stand out all the better because of what's around them. Anyway, we've covered that. Let's get back to Belmont. Let's talk about Belmont a second. Nice little town near Charlotte, North Carolina.
It is. It's about 12 miles from downtown Charlotte, and it's on we have total property. The Benedictines here own about 600 acres of land, and it's, again, only about 10 miles from the airport, so it's really beautiful. And I hate to rub it in, but I think I heard you had snow or something.
Man.
It's about 70 degrees down here today, and, you know, people are walking around in shorts.
Well, I'll tell you what. My stepdaughter goes out with a guy who's the assistant coach at Queens College Lacrosse.
Okay.
She spent a couple days down there and just flew back last night. she said she left 75 degree yep. temperature and came in. We went out to the airport last night. It was touch and go. So the difference between Charlotte today yep. and Baltimore today, even though they're only, you know, got 400 miles apart,
exactly.
is major. You're down there in the sunny south and everything's looking good down there.
All right, listen. I'm originally from New York. You know,
oh,
so
wow.
I'm used to, you know, colder weather and so forth, but I have to tell you, I really like it down here. This is you get the four seasons, it's a nice place, and the college is really, again, providential in terms of how it got here.
Mm-hmm.
We're about 135 years old as of this April, and it was providence. I mean, to think of a Catholic college in the middle of the Bible Belt.
Oh, sure, you're down there in the Bible Belt.
Yeah, and you had, you know, going way back in time, there was anti-Catholicism and Ku Klux Klan and all kinds of things down here, and for these monks in black robes to be surviving is just remarkable.
Doctor, let's take a break. We'll be right back with more of Face the Truth Coast to Coast, talk about more about Belmont Abbey down there in beautiful Belmont, North Carolina. Stay with us.
Hello, this is Father Frank Pavone. I often point out that our youth are not simply the future leaders of the pro-life movement, they are leaders here and now, in more ways than one. Often I'm asked to speak about the role of youth in the pro-life movement and to encourage parishes and pro-life organizations to focus on recruiting youth for this cause. In fact, this is not a difficult task. Youth understand the pro-life message better than many adults. And the most common response they give to the question, why are you involved in trying to stop abortion, is because it could have been me. They are aware that they were not protected in the womb and could have been killed. They are survivors and they know it. May our young people be strong in protecting the youngest. This is Father Frank Pavone, Director of Priests for Life for the National Pro-Life Radio Network.
And now, for the Institute on the Constitution, here's Michael Anthony Perutka with The American View.
Have you noticed all the advertisements about protecting you from identity theft? I got to wondering why this is so prevalent these days. I don't think my grandmom or my granddad worried about this very much. And then I realized that back in the day, you just were who you were. The only way to steal your identity was to kidnap you. You see, when they talk about protecting your identity, what they are really talking about is your virtual identity. And your virtual identity is discoverable mostly through your Social Security number. So the whole problem wouldn't even exist if you didn't have a Social Security number. You might still have a credit card number or a bank account, but if they weren't all linked by a Social Security number, the problem wouldn't be on anybody's radar screen. It seems to me that this is a great reason not to have a Social Security number or even to participate in this unconstitutional program. After all, it's common knowledge that Social Security is a bankrupt Ponzi scheme which cannot and will not pay its obligations in the future. It seems to me that this is a program no one would knowingly and thoughtfully join up for, and that may be why hospital personnel acting on the government's behalf ask you to sign your baby up for the Social Security program right there in the maternity ward. The form you sign to get a number is actually a request for them to give you one, so you're legally free not to make the request. Wouldn't we be better off just keeping it totally real? The best way not to have your virtual identity stolen is not to have a virtual identity. It's a lot harder for a criminal to steal the real you. This is Michael Anthony Perutka for Institute on the Constitution, bringing you the American View.
This is Rob McQuay for the Institute on the Constitution, and you've just finished hearing Michael Anthony Perutka's commentary on the American View. If you've enjoyed these commentaries, you may want to learn more about the American View and the Institute on the Constitution's work. To find out more about who we are and what we do, visit us at theamericanview.com and iotconline.com, or email us at michael@theamericanview.com.
And we're back with Dr. William Thierfelder from the president of Belmont Abbey College. This is Steve Perutka, and we've been talking to the presidents of colleges that are still have their Catholic identity, and certainly Belmont Abbey is one of them. They're highly recommended by the Cardinal Newman Society, who looks into these kind of things. Doctor, you're a school of about 1,740 or
yep.
so, counting everybody. I guess the weekend college is a big part of your school, and I guess that helps the non-traditional student, the older person.
It definitely does. Our Delta Degree program has been a great benefit to the college in one very specific way, and that was the Benedictines have always helped you know, those that needed help and needed a leg up and so forth. And our adult degree program just touches you. Each student that's in there, you hear their story, and it's life-changing. It transforms them. I mean, each year at graduation and at the ring ceremony we have, you know, the whole family comes. I mean,
right.
Everybody feels like they earned that degree together because they all sacrificed to get it. And it's just really a wonderful thing to see.
And one of the one thing I understand that's in all classrooms, and one thing you live by, is something called the 10 Hallmarks of Benedictine Education.
Yes.
Could you tell us about that?
Yeah, sure. I mean, just to maybe list them for you. And they're all, I think, things that most people would relate to. You know, the first hallmark is love. You know,
right.
Love of Christ and neighbor, prayer, stability, which is, and you know, most people might realize, but monastic communities are of place. When a monk comes to a monastic community, he doesn't transfer any place. He lives here his entire life, and then he gets buried out in the cemetery. You know, I mean, this is really a remarkable vocation, and this one vow they take of stability is kind of an unusual one. And we have a call for the same kind of thing in our own lives, even though we may not be monks. The next one is called conversatio, which is a way of formation and transformation. Obedience, and boy, do we need obedience today.
Sure.
Commitment to listening and so forth. Discipline, you know, again, a way toward learning and freedom, as you mentioned with sport. Certainly all of these virtues can be helped cultivated under sport. Humility, especially important in the rule of St. Benedict. Humility is talked about. Stewardship, there's a real sense of good use of the land and the things and the gifts that God has given us here, and the Benedictines take that very, very seriously.
Mm-hmm.
Hospitality, it's really welcoming each person as Christ. The Benedictines, we welcome each guest in persona Christi, as Christ. And that's really a powerful statement to say. So forget customer service. We're talking about seeing Jesus Christ in each person that comes here.
Right.
And that's an incredible kind of welcome.
And
the final one is community.
Good. Yeah.
And that's, we're kind of called to serve the common good here.
And speaking of hospitality, you are only about 60 to 65% Catholic, right?
Yeah, living on campus traditionally, I'd say it's about 60% Catholic, and that's where I think where we're different than say a school in the Northeast, which tends again the population tends to be much higher Catholic population.
Right.
This is why I say we're kind of in mission territory, and so the very beautiful thing about the Benedictines is that we're solidly Catholic, we follow the teachings of the Church, we follow Ex Cordia Ecclesiae, and at the same time we open up our arms and we say to anybody, come on in, we love you, whoever you are, what your faith, your background, come on in, we welcome you in. And it's a great opportunity for many people who did not understand Catholicism or to know what we believe to get to know it. And there's been many, many conversions here. Not that I leave those conversions to God, but, you know, there's many people that as they come to be exposed to Catholicism, they see that deeper, fuller truth, and they come to embrace it.
Right. And the Adoration Chapel, a big part geographically and spiritually of your campus.
I wanted that to be the very first thing that we built. We have many needs here, as you can imagine, as a small little liberal arts college. And we had a big master plan for all of these buildings and things. But the very first thing I wanted was a new Adoration Chapel. We'd had a little tiny one tucked behind the monastery, and it was very kind of run-down looking. And I thought, oh, gosh, we can do better than this. So I thought, you know, the first money is when we can finally raise some money. We'll build an Adoration Chapel. And I wanted to do that for two reasons. One is Jesus Christ is the center of this college. And so I thought the most important thing to do was to make the actual physical statement, to show this is what we value most.
Mm-hmm.
And I also thought by having that Adoration Chapel there, we are going to get more vocations to this monastery, and we're going to get more holy students to come to this school. And so I didn't have $1 for it. And one day an alumnus walks in and says, here's $500,000. I want to build an alumni house.
Right.
And I thought, oh, my gosh, I don't want an alumni house first. I want the chapel first.
Right.
And this person felt very strongly, really wanted the alumni house, and I said, thank you very much. And I sat there at my desk, and I went up and I talked to Ken Davison, who's our director of college relations, and I said, here's the situation. I want the Adoration Chapel first, but, you know, we've just got this person who's giving us all the money for an alumni house. What do you think? He said, let's just break ground on it.
Right.
I said, okay. So we went over, literally the next week, cleared the land where it was going to be, and it's in the middle of campus, right near the residence halls,
right.
And got a bulldozer in there, took out some of the trees, beautiful place, location. Bishop came over, abbot came over, we blessed the land,
right.
Where the altar was going to be. And we raised the money for that. That was the first thing we broke ground on, and we raised the money for that in just about a year, almost $850,000.
Wow.
And it is the most beautiful chapel, and it is used night and day. We got students stopping in there every part of the day, even if it's just to stop by for 10 minutes on their way to class.
Right.
It's a retreat. It's just beautiful, peaceful, and people just love coming to it. And so,
yeah.
It's bearing fruit. I mean, Jesus Christ is the center of the college, and I can tell you the students that are coming today and the faculty and the staff and even some interest now in vocations to the monastery, I believe it's working.
I've only recently come to recognize the importance of an adoration chapel. We just put one in my parish, Our Lady of the Fields in Millersville.
Oh, great.
And it sort of has energized people, and it's energized the priest. Everybody's got a little hop in their step, and that's what an adoration chapel can do for you.
Absolutely. Well, matter of fact, when people first came here, when I first arrived, they tell me there's something special about this place. And I knew what it was. It's Jesus. I mean, when I tell you that Jesus Christ is the center of the college, I don't mean that figuratively.
Right.
I mean it literally.
Right.
You can feel his presence here. And so when you say an adoration chapel, you can feel the presence of Jesus Christ here. And by the way, we have a basilica here as well. It was dedicated as a basilica by John Paul II, and it's Mary Help of Christians. And it's been here since the beginning. It's just Jesus Christ is here. You can feel him. And the special thing about the place is him. So when you talk about an energy, I mean, it's a literal energy. In other words, you are feeling the love of Jesus Christ radiating out from that adoration chapel.
Well, I feel the Jesus Christ radiating out from your speaking right now.
So there you go.
Now the monks, are they involved in the school?
Oh, very much. And we are particularly blessed to have a holy, smart, intellectual abbot, Abbot Placid Solari. I mean, he is just a wonderful abbot and priest. He's a spiritual director. He's, in a sense, as abbot, he stands in the place of Christ for the monastic community here. He is chancellor of the college. He got his doctorate in the from the Augustinium in Rome in patristics. Just a brilliant individual and just a wonderful Benedictine. I mean, he's so balanced, so solid in the Catholic faith. At the same time, he welcomes all, and it's just beautiful to see.
Right. One of the things that's near and dear to my heart, of course, is pro-life activities. And I'm sure you guys make the trip to Washington
every year. Yep. And it's been only growing. I mean, this year we had, I think, two buses go down. We had over 70 students there, and it's a wonderful event. I know you've done coverage of that before, and it's really, if anybody that hasn't got a chance to go, I realize everybody can't go sometimes because of various reasons, but if you can go, it's worth the experience of going. You know, it's the true participation of the body of Christ. You know, as we all march up Constitution, I mean, you have a sense of, back to the point, we're not alone.
No, we're not alone.
There are more people with us than against us.
That's exactly what I was thinking. You know, sometimes the pro-life struggle is a little lonely. And when you get there, it's a shot in the arm for me every year.
You've pointed out how many young people are there.
Oh, yes.
And I'll tell you, that's why we're going to win this.
Right. Nothing but
kids. As you know,
kids.
I have 10 children. My wife and I have 10 children. The pro-life families are the ones having children.
Right. Right.
So eventually, just by sheer numbers, we're going to take over.
We can't lose this battle.
We're not going to.
Doctor, tell us how to get in contact with you with your school if somebody wants to find out more information.
You can go onto the website. It's www.belmontabbeycollege.edu.
Okay.
That's ABBEY, Belmont Abbey College. And you can just go onto the website, and just about everything you'd want to find out or learn about is there. And you certainly can call us here. I mean, we have, the direct number of the school is 704, which is our area code, 461-6700, and they'll direct you into admissions or financial aid or anything else that you might be interested in academics knowing about. But I would encourage people to come and visit because it's the kind of place that, you know, again, you just hear about it at a distance. I will tell you that over 60% of the people that visit the college enroll.
Is that right?
There's something about it. When you come here, you're usually immediately drawn to it. And the buildings, which I didn't mention, but when you come here, you see these beautiful brick Gothic buildings. Well, these monks, when they came here, there were two shacks on this property. They dug up this red clay, they formed it into bricks, they dried it in the sun, and they placed these bricks here over 130 years ago.
Wow.
So when you come here, you're placing your hands on those bricks, and you are as important as those 10 founding monks.
Well,
I believe God's calling people here today.
I'm going to put it on my list to go to. I haven't been there, but I'd love to come.
I'll take you for a cup of coffee down to holy ground.
I appreciate that. Dr. Thierfelder, thank you so much, and congratulations on your induction into the Sports Faith Hall of Fame. And we certainly encourage people to look at your college. And again, thank you.
And I want to say this. You know, God bless you and all that you're doing. This your work is so important because of what we said. There's a feeling of isolation today in the secular media and so forth, and we can all feel alone. But when you have a program like this and you're out there and you're making people aware of what's going on, I can't begin to express to you how grateful I am for the work that you're doing.
Those are kind words, and I value them highly. Thank you very much. And thank you, folks. We want to come back next week with another great Catholic college we'll talk about, and we'll see you then on Face the Truth, Coast to Coast.
Face the Truth Coast to Coast is sponsored by the law firm of Perutka & Perutka, providing professional control of accounts receivable since 1991. Join us again next week for Face the Truth.